You're listening to the Spicy Dividend.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Spicy Dividend Podcast. It is Friday. Yay, everybody loves Friday. But it's also episode 50. Never, ever would I have thought that I would make a podcast in my life, let alone make it to 50 episodes. Now, you know, there was a nice 2 to 3 year hiatus there, so I had a lot of breathing room to make it to 50 episodes, but here we are, episode 50. And for the anniversary, the 50 episode anniversary, I'll give a little bit of a personal story at the end just to keep it a little light on this Friday. But if you're not interested in personal stories, because who the hell cares about me, let's get into an early investing topic. So I'm probably late on this, considering that the meeting from Jerome Powell was Wednesday, but he made a pretty much as expected increase in the federal funds rate, 0.25, I believe it was. It's interesting because everyone is kind of on edge right now. They don't really know what to expect from Jerome Powell. So he gave kind of comments, and the market is reflecting this. It was whiplashing all week after this. But his comments are kind of on the fence whether he thinks that they're going to cut rates in the future or whether they're going to increase to try and beat inflation at all cost. And the market is uneasy with it. So a lot of people are thinking that they take Jerome Powell's comments from that call on Wednesday, and they're saying, you know, he's doing everything he can to beat inflation. Beating inflation is the most important thing that you can do for a country's economy. I personally agree with that sentiment. There's other people who say, look, it seems like he's getting on the end of raising these rates, the way that he's slowly increasing and he's making comments that, you know, they might not increase in the future. People look at that as like, okay, that's going to stimulate the economy. Loans are cheaper for companies to, you know, leverage on the bank. So you become extremely bullish in the market. And then there's some that think that he's not going to be backing down at all. He's going to be raising rates. It doesn't matter if there's any bank failures that's going to occur. These people are extremely bearish. And one of those people is, of course, the Twitter king himself, Elon Musk, who said ChatGPT could do a better job of running the economy than Jerome Powell, which, look, Elon has said a lot of stupid things in his days, but this is absolutely one of the most idiotic things. I'm not one to defend government workers, but I personally think that Jerome Powell is doing a fantastic job. If I were personally put into his shoes, I don't think I would do anything different than what he has done. I think the aggressive rate raises that happened with all this inflation that's occurring was absolutely necessary. And at the same token, the thing that got us into this, you know, printing all this money and putting interest rates to pretty much zero during the pandemic, I think that was the right move to do. I personally, if you put me in that situation, gun to my head, I'm not changing anything that he did. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. You could say there's, you know, there's certain rates at certain points that could have been better. Maybe we should have never lowered it all the way to zero during the pandemic. But, you know, it's easy, like I said, hindsight. But in that moment, I agreed with pretty much every move he pulled. Me personally, I kind of want to see rates slowly yet surely still increasing until the end of the year. I think once you get to the end of the year, all this bank mess kind of clears out and you get a better understanding of where we are, where we truly are with the economy. I think in the year 2023, we are finally 100% past the COVID implications of everything. So yes, you still have a lot more people working from home. So maybe on the employee side, it's not much different. But in terms of the consumer side, I mean, the supply chain issues that were heavily barring a lot of consumer interest in economics, I'm not wording that right at all. A lot of the supply chain issues that were affecting, what's the word I'm looking for? Suppliers, just the business line in general. It was weighing down a lot of people's, a lot of companies' bottom line. A lot of that stuff has come to pass in late 2022 and early this year in 23. And you can do that by looking at charts of an average freightliner Freightliner cost to get from China to the United States, it has gone down to almost 2019 levels. So you can see that the pandemic crisis in terms of the supply chain, it's slowly returning to normal. Now, that's not to say that's the same thing for the microchip industry, an industry that I honestly have no idea about. I can't even begin to speculate about that. You know, stuff like AMD and NVIDIA, Supermicro computer. I honestly don't know anything with the chips and whatnot. I have no idea if that's still in a shortage or not, but I know supply chain in general, we're pretty much back to normal, to standard shipping cost, which is great for businesses. So I think in 2023, that all being said, you know, no one's really masking up and afraid to go into stores anymore. I think we have an essence of what a normal economy should look like. So that being said, if inflation does go down a little bit in 2023 after all these rates, I think then at the end of the year, you can officially say we no longer need to raise rates. We are at a point in our economy where we are healthy enough where we can stop raising and we can even look to cut in the future if need be. So maybe some lessons from the pandemic for Mr. Powell is that, you know, if something were to happen, we don't immediately cut rates to like zero, to ground level. Maybe that is the lesson learned here. The cuts would be a little bit more drawn out, a little more drastic. Maybe we start getting, you know, 0.1, 0.2% instead of just like these big, you know, 0.5% to 1% basis drops or increases at a time. Maybe that's the only thing that would happen. So I thought that was really interesting. I do completely agree with his strategy right now. It's pretty much at this point, it's a wait and see mentality. And that's pretty much what you have to do. That's your job as Jerome Powell in this situation. I mean, you can't predict the future. You have no idea if this Silicon Valley Bank and the banking crises that are happening in Europe with Deutsche and Credit Suisse, you have no idea if that's going to be just a one-off thing or if that's going to cause massive turmoil in the United States banking system. You don't know. You have to just wait it out. And, you know, if it ends up being that Silicon Valley was just, you know, a casualty of, you know, bad timing and bad investments, and then no other banks, you know, go under or have any bank run issues or anything along those lines, it's going to make Elon Musk look really stupid and Jerome Powell look like a genius. You have to take some stance, but I think Jerome's doing the right idea in that it's a wait and see stance rather than a be aggressive with rate cuts or be aggressive with rate increases in the near future. So that's my take on the whole Fed call that happened on Wednesday. So let's get into the next topic. All right, the sixth topic I'm going to get into is a little bit, it's still stock market related, but it's a little bit personal for me. So I am cruising on Wall Street Bets right now. I've been following them for a long time, ever since I started this podcast, and ever since I've joined Reddit, I've been following along Wall Street Bets. I've even made posts on there before. I mean, I haven't been active on Wall Street Bets in over 3 or 4 years now, but I have been following along. And, you know, as I matured, I'm now 32 years old, I've realized that you kind of see gambling issues more. You take it more seriously when you're someone like me. So I've had gambling issues over the years. I still do have a gambling issue. There's a reason that I have recently, the end of 2021, that I banned myself from online gambling for 5 years, just because I knew it was a bad habit. I started working from home, and, you know, realizing that you have a gambling problem is huge. Okay. That being said, let's get into this post and why I'm bringing this up. So the guy is sharing his position on Robinhood, of course, in Wall Street Bets fashion. He's showing his position in First Republic Bank, which is another bank that's, you know, not doing so hot with all of this stuff going on. And the title of it is, "Please help. I have not slept in days. This is everything I have. I'm devastated. I was told the stock would be a dollar soon. Should I get out?" And the stock right now is at $12.60. But he had an average cost of $23.82. And currently, right now, his position is down $94,000 or 47% overall. So, look, here's why I'm bringing up the gambling thing and whatnot. Yo, take it from me personally. I've had a major issue with gambling, and this is not just casinos. This is especially true with stock market investing, okay? So a lot of people don't know this. I think I shared this maybe on a YouTube video, maybe on Twitter at some point, but there was a period of time after late 2020-ish that I started just day trading, and I didn't really tell anyone about it, and I lost a lot of money. And you know, you follow this podcast, for me to be transparent, and I will say that I lost $46,000 day trading, and it was one of the worst experiences of my entire life. So what I'm saying to you is, when you're taking a position like this guy in Wall Street Bets, where if you lose money and you can't sleep in days and you're devastated, you know, what are you doing with your money? First of all, if money's that important to you, where if you lose it, you're losing sleep and whatnot, you know, it really is hard-earned money to you. Like, this isn't a game. You need to preserve your capital as much as you possibly can. And, you know, you're not investing, you're gambling. And what's the whole point of going to a casino, right? Let me phrase it to you this way. Do you go into a casino expecting to win? Do you? I mean, common sense would tell you that you're not going to win when you go into a casino. So the whole mentality is, okay, I'm getting entertainment out of it. So what entertainment do you get putting such a large chunk of your life savings into an individual position, which is going to fluctuate like gambling? It doesn't matter what hunches you have, because guess what? A hunch on an individual stock is like a hunch on roulette, okay? If it's 10 small numbers in a row on the roulette wheel, does not mean the 11th number is going to be big because of law of averages. And it's the same thing how people look at these failing bank stocks right now. Oh, they've gone down 60% year to date. They're going to go back up. They're big name banks. So it's a hunch, just like that 11th spin on the roulette wheel. Let's put everything I have into it. You don't go into a casino expecting to win. Why would you go into something like this expecting to win? Investing in individual stocks, investing in options, investing in day trading. It's not investing at all. It's just gambling, and that's what it is. But you're doing it at much higher stakes, and you're getting way less entertainment value than you would at a casino. You're not doing this with friends. You're not doing this at parties, okay? You're not drinking and doing the stock market. You invest for the long run. And even if you're investing for short-term games, you're still not doing it in stupid things like individual stocks and day trading, okay? Let this be a lesson. Never day trade and never gamble on individual stocks with more than like 2% of your whole portfolio. It's just not worth it, okay? It's not investment advice necessarily, but I'm telling you as a person who has degenerate gambling problems, and why my podcast name, or why my YouTube name for a while there was Degenerate Dividends, it's because I was a degenerate and I'm trying to break that mold. Just take it from heart, from someone who's personally been affected, okay? Do not day trade. Do not invest in individual stocks with more than you can lose. And if anything that you invest in makes you lose sleep or makes you devastated and makes you not focus, just don't do it, okay? Okay, now that that's over with, let's get into a little bit of a rant, because it's been a while and nothing's more appropriate on episode 50 than a little rant. All right, it's Friday. Let's add a little levity. Let's add a little bit of a rant here. So I'm looking at I was just looking at reviews of my podcast on Apple Podcasts. I never do that because honestly, like once I record this podcast and I just quickly edit it, I just put it on Anchor, let it disperse it, and pretty much never look at it again unless there's YouTube comments on it or something. But I was looking at reviews and, you know, as expected, I'm not expecting great reviews because I say a lot of stupid stuff. And this, you know, for being a quote unquote dividend podcast, you know, like, how seriously are you taking me right now? I mean, look, at the end of the day, I'm a 32-year-old accountant, so I'm good with numbers, but at the same time, that doesn't make me like an investment advisor or a financial advisor or anything like that. You don't follow along on this podcast to hear me talk about, discount cash flow methods and all that other stuff. First of all, unless those people are accredited, you know, they're most likely just trying to give you advice in some way that they shouldn't be doing either, or they're trying to pump up their own positions, or they're trying to just rationalize everything that they're doing. Look, one of the reviews of my podcast said, bad advice, don't listen to, only listen for entertainment. Okay, who in the hell is dumb enough? First of all, I don't give advice, okay? The advice that I just gave in the second portion of this podcast where it's like, don't gamble, that's kind of like common sense. That's not exactly advice. And first of all, and second of all, he's talking about financial advice. No way in hell is anything I say possibly construed as financial advice, okay? Even when I was doing like hardcore dividend investing, never in my life would I walk up to you on the street, if I didn't have this microphone in front of my big ass nose, never in my street would I walk up to you and say, you need to invest in this dividend and you need to make dividends. I don't care what the taxes are. It has to be a Roth. Look, who the hell am I? Who the hell is anyone to say anything? But if you believe the stupid moves that I did, oh my goodness, like, who is following my moves? Who is following my dividend and my stock portfolio moves? Who? Are you that stupid? But there's another portion, there's another reason why I kind of want to rant here. It's because, you know, I was investing in an M1 Finance in hundreds of these positions with not that much money, okay? Maybe, you know, in relative, maybe to some people it's a lot of money, like college students or whatever. But in the grand scheme of things, I was not investing that much money where it's like, oh my God, I got to follow what this guy's doing. He's investing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. He must know what he's doing. Let's talk about someone who does invest hundreds of thousands of dollars and is a complete fucking idiot. And that is financial education on YouTube. Now, it's been a long time since I've recorded podcast sessions. I think I've done rants on him before, but financial education might be the worst investor I've ever seen in my entire life. And he doesn't even disclose like, oh, this isn't financial advice. Your fucking YouTube name is financial education, meaning that you're trying to, I don't know, educate people that are coming on to your YouTube channel. And let's just go over, you know, some of his stock picks, right? Okay, he is known for Tesla and Tesla only because that's like the only winner he's ever picked long term in his entire life. Tesla. And let me tell you, Tesla had one of the biggest run-ups in stock market history. So if you had Tesla in your portfolio from early on, you're going to look like a genius because the run-up has been so good. The returns have been so good. What in the hell could this guy have possibly known about a once-failing car company just investing long run that makes him special than any other investor out there? Okay? Nothing. That being said, let's talk about some more gems that he's poured thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into. Honest Company, absolute dud. Voyager, bankrupt. Corsair Gaming, dud. Oatly Group, which sells fucking oat milk. How much do you think a fucking company selling oat milk is going to expand? He bought that shit at like $8. It's like a dollar. Dud, absolute garbage. Tattooed Chef, vegan food that he didn't even like. He said he tried half the stuff and he didn't even like it. Garbage. How much do you expect that to expand? How much do you expect a frozen vegan food product to expand? This is the guy that preaches innovation with stuff like Tesla and like, oh, you're in your own niche. You don't have competition. You need, you know, growth, growth, growth. And you're going to invest in a fucking frozen vegan food company, a food company, period. What food company do you expect to really grow? I mean, honestly, the best like food and beverage companies out there are something like a Pepsi and Coca-Cola. And they're growing very, 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 very small over decades and decades. Okay? You think a little dinky vegan food company that doesn't even make that healthy of a food is going to really do good in America? Let's be real. Okay? So that was another dud. What else do we got? Oh man, there was one on the tip of my tongue. Oh, Planet 13. He thinks he's like some kind of genius picking a weed stock that is OTC. Because it's not listed on any of these major brokerages, it's like, oh, I must have found a hidden gem because I live in Las Vegas and there is a Planet 13 thing in Las Vegas. Therefore, it must be a great stock. even though the weed business has been an absolute dud in America. Ignore that. There's a thing in Las Vegas. I've been to it. It has shiny lights and there's a people lining up out the door. How many people? I'll never tell you, but I'm telling you, people are lining up. The guy spends hundreds of thousands of dollars, never says to not follow his advice. He's constantly telling you which stocks he's buying. He's throwing thousands of dollars. He's showing his portfolio. That is a guy whose name is Financial Fucking Education that should be like on the chopping block. Why do we give him a pass? It's so bad. That's my rant. Man, if you took Degenerate Dividends or the Dividend Grinder as like financial advice, if you genuinely followed all of my picks, I mean, come on. Come on. Like, what did you really think was going to happen? I mean, I was at some point my portfolio had like 100 holdings with like $30 a piece in it. And it was like just for the sake of getting daily dividends. And it's like you had stuff like Eagle Point Credit Company. You had all these weird ass closed end funds that you knew were bad. Even I knew was bad when I was saying that. And I was even saying like, oh, well, they pay high and they pay monthly. Who in their right mind would follow that? And I've said multiple times in multiple videos, in multiple podcasts, do not follow investment advice from like anyone, let alone me. I'm not a financial advisor, and you hellas know this, okay? You know I'm hella dumb with that kind of stuff. Why would you listen to it? But God, you have a person whose name is Financial Education showing individual stock picks that are garbage, and you know he's influencing people to buy it because he's putting hundreds of thousands of dollars that he gets from YouTube, by the way. He's not a financial advisor. He's not an accountant even. He's not a financial analyst. He's a freaking serial entrepreneur. And he's putting the manure in entrepreneur. Okay? His job in his life is to just make money at any means possible, which is why he has a crappy app that he tries to sell. It's why he shows off this portfolio and he makes clickbait titles and stupid thumbnails with his mouth wide open. Okay? It's all for money. He does not care if his stocks do well or not. And he doesn't care if you follow his picks or not. He doesn't. He just wants to sell his course, sell his stupid little app, and make money off YouTube using shock value. So that's my little rant on the 50th episode. We're going to end the financial part of the podcast right there. So if you're only interested in financial and personal finance talk, you can end it right here. As for me, since it's the 50th episode, we're going to go on a little life story. So here we go. All right, let's keep it a little light. So here's the story of how I broke my nose. Okay, so picture high school basketball. Okay, my 6'5", cankly ass, dangly, uncoordinated ass is on the basketball court. And this is before the season starts and we're doing conditioning drills. Okay, so they brought this guy from like the military in, and he was making us do these insane drills that weren't even related to basketball, but one that was kind of related, trying to develop acceleration and top speed, was what he called the parachute drill. And basically what would happen is you would team up with two other people. They would wrap like a belt around all three of you. Two of those people would take off running early. And then your job in the anchor position was to catch up. So what would happen is it would develop your top speed because you would learn how to use your strides to catch up. You also got to accelerate. So, you know, you don't get left behind. You don't get, you wouldn't get dragged by the two people that take off in front of you. So basically it looks like a giant triangle. The two people in front of you take off and then you got to essentially catch them with all of your belts connected, interlooped by rope. So like an elastic rope, not like rope. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, the drills are going on and I'm completely looking the other way, thinking that the group ahead of us did not go. Well, they already went and my group just took off. I'm completely looking the other way, right? And I turn around and it's something straight out of a cartoon. I mean, I just flat out nosedive right onto the court and my big ass nose just went, and I mean, I heard it it was a pop noise. My coach heard it. And he just looks at me and he's like, oh God. And I'm like, what? Like, to me, like, I think I was more so embarrassed at the moment that like I didn't even like feel the pain register at all. And he just looks at me and he's like, yeah, that's got to be fixed. And he just took his thumbs and he just straightened it out. That's when it hurt. Okay. That's when I really felt it. And like the embarrassment quickly went away to, ow, what the fuck was that? So in a matter of seconds, I embarrass myself. I break my nose and I feel the pain of realigning my nose all within 60 seconds. That's just a light story to end this Friday, end the 50th podcast. That's how I broke my nose. Man, I've injured so many parts of my body. I've broken my right thumb twice, my left thumb four times. I broke my nose. I broke my pinky toe. I've torn my hamstring. I've chipped a part of my tailbone. I've chipped my tooth five times. I've sprained both ankles. Oh my God, I have polycystic kidney disease. I am just a medical disaster. And yeah, I have so many stories about getting hurt that, you know, some of them are funny and some of them are just like, ow, like I just feel bad for you at this point. So that was the end of the 50th podcast. Hope you enjoyed the rant. Hope you enjoyed the beginning financial pieces. I will see you in the next recording.